Hello, this is the Specific Focus Men Group. Recording
set up. I'm all set here, thank you.
Wow.
Nice to be talking to a group of men, you know. My very first meeting was just almost all women, 50 people, most haunting to say the least. I thought it went very well.
Good.
I did. Jackie is a sweetheart, and she spoke really eloquently. She was really good. Yeah, she was really sweet. I'm in the mood to do some sharing this morning. Afternoon, if you want.
They're challenged.
Good afternoon. My name is Ed. I'm a grateful, recovering, compulsive overeater. And I want to let everybody know this session is being recorded and it may be published at a later date. By sharing at the microphone, if you so choose, you're consenting to be recorded to publish the recording. If you wish to remain anonymous, you just come up and use a fictitious name. I'm going to talk about someone that appears in the big book, Dr. Henry Tibot. He was a psychiatrist who was very active in promoting the problems of alcoholism and addictive behaviors to the general public, as well as going on to become on the board of trustees in AA, and eventually being appointed to the National Council on Alcoholism. What he talked about is a couple of things that I found interesting. I didn't know who this guy was, so I decided, I want to go back and see why he was so instrumental in terms of how he saw addiction. And wrote this wonderful paper on the process of surrendering. And I thought it was really interesting. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that today. And his paper is like heavily laden with a lot of Freudian psychology, which we don't really need to talk about. But I'd like to talk about those things that probably apply to us as compulsive overeaters. Can everybody hear me okay? Okay. Ashley went on to treat Bill Wilson for depression, when Bill Wilson suffered from depression. I just went on to treat Bill Wilson for depression in the 1940s. He started off by saying in this paper about surrendering that he saw several qualities in the addicted. He was writing mostly about males' personalities, that there were several qualities that were present in the men. They were, and I'm going to go through them. He said that most men in the program have a need to dominate. Dominate can be a million things, from being like the power driver. Could also be someone who always wants to win, who always has to win, who always wants to have his point of view first, who always wants to get what they want to get, but in some way, dominate. Okay, for me, dominating for me was, I was a very manipulative guy. And the way I got my way was to kind of go in the back door and convince you that my way was the right way. And I did that by being very kind and loving and gentle, but I was very clear that the goal was to win and to dominate the situation. Okay, I wasn't someone that came in like a steamroller. I always went in the back door. And that got to dominate. Second quality was a prevailing, negative, hostile feeling tone to their personality. Okay? I can't really say that applied to me. But I always, before program, I always had like a sort of a suspicious quality to my personality. When I was growing up, my mother would, you know, if somebody did something for us in the neighborhood or wanted something from us in the neighborhood, my mother would always say, why? Why do they want that? Like if someone did nice, it was like, why did they do that for you? Or if someone says, I owe them something, well, why? What did you do? There was always this underlying suspiciousness to everything. And that left me with an underlying suspiciousness about people and what they did and how they treated me. So it wasn't particularly hostile, but that quality. The third quality was a quality of what he called ecstatic peaks in personality. So have you ever had those days where you're just feeling ecstatic? Yes? No? Okay. When I would get my way, when I was able to manipulate and get what I wanted, I was often ecstatic. All right? If I could win, if I could dominate, I was ecstatic. I won. And so I would have that. So I would go from being high, really ecstatic, to low. There was a lot in my life of loneliness and isolation. And that's one of the other qualities of what he says are sort of an addictive personality. Growing up, my father was an injured World War II veteran who had neurological problems. My mother was someone that suffered from depression. They really were not the most demonstrative of parents. They really cared, but they weren't necessarily demonstrative. So early on, I realized that there was something about my parents that was off. I always had a sense that they loved me, but I always had a sense that they had more problems. And so the way I dealt with them was to leave them alone. And that's what I did. And so I spent lots of time as a kid by myself, lonely and being isolated. And that pattern follows me through adulthood into before program. And the way I dealt with that loneliness and isolation was to eat, and as a kid. Because the only person that ever really showed me, that was demonstrably affectionate with me, was my grandmother. And she was a big babushka of a woman who always just made sweets and cakes and candies. And in doing those things together with her, that's how I really felt cared about. So early on, the sweets and everything got linked with feeling, helping me feel less lonely, less isolated, and more loved when I ate cookies, cake. The next quality he talks about is something called a striving for perfection. Am I perfectionistic? I am perfectionist. Funny, because I had for a long time a duality, which was I would have to do something perfectly or I wouldn't touch it at all. Okay? That was the way it worked in me. That sort of bipolarish kind of existence. If it was something I really enjoyed doing, I would go to the max with it. If it was something you wanted me to do that I didn't want to do, I just never got done. No qualms in turning down something that I didn't want to do and was not perfectionistic in any of those things. I can remember being in school being very perfectionistic when it came to school, because school was the place where I got a lot of secondary attention from teachers for being successful, so I was good in school. These are the things he talked about for the men, the addictive men that he was working with. The dominating, the hostile tone, the ecstatic peaks, the loneliness, feelings of inferiority and superiority. Talk about those. So I could feel superior most of the time to you. Until something challenged that superiority. Like if I was in a room where 20 people told me my talk was really good and one person told me it sucked, I would go from all the way up here to all the way down there. I could go from riding the wave to feeling washed over by it. It was just how tenuous my personality was, how frightened I was of failure, how frightened I was of negative emotion, because my whole defenses were around being grandiose. You know, that was most of my defenses were around being a know-it-all. And when that was challenged, all right, down, into the ground. Barry Taibbi talks about trying to understand the surrender process in addiction. What makes us come to the point where we say we're ready to surrender. Okay? He talks about a couple of things. The first, he talks about what keeps us from surrender. For me, It was my grandiosity. My grandiosity and my know-it-all defiance of everything. Defiance in individuals is a quality that allows us to go on in the face of really uncomfortable emotions and pretend like nothing is wrong. Okay, so it's a way for someone like me that was really anxious and scared, that little boy was anxious and scared, the way I would think about it, defiance / denial, I could tell myself, well, these things don't matter to me. These things are not going to hurt me. My family would tell me over and over again that I ate too much. Okay, it got to be to the point where the gatherings, I would eat too much and I'd fall asleep on the couch. And then it became like where it became expected. So anytime we got together as a group, my family knew that I was going to eat too much and then fall asleep on the couch. And they'd say, where's Ed? Oh, Ed's sleeping on the couch. And they became accustomed to that. So I didn't have to deal with the fact that my eating behavior was out of control. And no one was challenging me. So I could say, you know, this doesn't matter to me. This doesn't affect me. It doesn't affect me at all. Grandiosity, this infantile feeling that I know it all and did everything, and I know how everything should go, really also helped me. Because I could say, for instance, oh, I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem. I mean, I know what a problem is. Okay? So I'm a retired therapist, so I know, you know, I thought I knew what problems I had, what emotional problems I had. So I'd go around something like, hey, I'm a therapist. I don't have an eating problem. Yeah, not at all. Not at all. I couldn't have been wrong. So what happens? What happens makes that change? In Dr. Taibach's point of view, what makes that change is something external happens. External happens that gives us no choice in having to deal with things. For me, I was running a successful program for juvenile delinquents. I had a group home in the community. There were 10 kids in the program. It was very successful. And I got promoted to an even more difficult job working with kids. This program had more difficult kids in it. So I went from being very comfortable, being able to handle this program, to being thrown into a program where I couldn't manage the anger and the conflicted personality of these teenagers. None of my defenses worked. My chief defenses were to overeat. So if I was anxious, I would overeat. Or I would pretend that it wasn't a problem, okay? Or I would just isolate. Those were my chief methods of dealing with things before program. Being with these kids that were very rough and difficult, you know, those things didn't work anymore, okay? But you know, they would pick up chairs and threaten me with chairs. They would get in my face and scream at me, and I had to stay composed and be able to deal with them, because that's what you have to do with those kind of kids, to be able to stand up to them and let them know you're not. So what happened? So when I took this other job, the first month I took this job, I couldn't sleep, could hardly eat. I lost 25 pounds out of just pure anxiety. Nothing worked. I tried everything to try to, none of my defenses were working. So they were all exhausted. I couldn't pretend I knew everything because I didn't. I didn't know how to deal with these kids. I went into therapy. And the therapist that I had was wonderful. And within the first or second month, I can't really remember now anymore, he had said, you know, you're a compulsive overeater. And I said, no, I'm not. I would know if I'm a compulsive overeater. He said, no, you're a compulsive overeater. Everything you describe to me tells me you're a compulsive overeater and you need to be in OA. I fought him on that. I fought him on that for weeks. Every week, I was on twice a week individual and group therapy. And I fought him on that for a long time, and then finally I gave in because I was losing weight, I couldn't eat, I was an anxious, nervous wreck, and nothing was working for me. So I said, okay, I'm going to go. And I went. And at that moment, that's when I said there was nothing else I could do. Because prior to that, I had spent years yo-yo dieting, okay, gaining, losing, gaining, losing, gaining, losing. That's what the straw that broke the camel's back for me. My grandiosity did no longer help me. My self-centeredness no longer helped me. My defiance / denial no longer helped me. Nothing worked. And so I went into program. And I'm glad I did. When I came into program, Dr. Taibat talks about the catharsis that comes when we're in program. So what is he talking about? I don't know if you can remember from the early days of being in program, but once I was able to admit that I was a compulsive overeater, there was such a sense of relief. When I had my first sponsor, and I did my first food inventory, and I could write out all the things I did, eating whenever I wanted, eating 4 or 5 times a day, eating food that was high in sugar content, eating, stopping on the way home before dinner and having an ice cream sundae to go home and have dinner and then go home to have dessert, okay? Eating food from the garbage, eating food that was frozen because I just needed to have it. Those things. When I was able to write those things out for the first time, there was a lifting off my chest. And there was, for the time being, that sort of pink cloud in the beginning that we go through. But you know, I didn't really work the program my first year. You may have heard me talk in the panel discussion. But the first year in program, I played games. Okay? I told my sponsor that I was working the program. But all I was doing was following a food plan and being abstinent in a food plan. I wasn't working the program. I wasn't working the emotional aspects of the program. I wasn't interested in character defects. I wasn't interested in changing at all. I wasn't interested in developing a closer relationship with God. God was 45 minutes on Sunday. Okay? That's what God was. And somebody you prayed to when you needed something. Okay? There was no close relationship. So after a year of that, okay, despite the fact that I looked good on the outside, I lost 80 pounds, I was slimmer, I looked good, you know, I had had friends in program, all that loneliness and isolation was gone, I was enjoying meetings, but inside I was really a phony. I was really a phony. I was not being honest with my sponsor, I was not being honest with my fellow OAs. Nothing like that happened. I crashed. After a year of doing this, my feelings of being an imposter, a phony and an imposter, were so strong that I had to find some way to sabotage myself. And sabotage and self-sabotage for me had been one of my character defects. Whenever I was on the crux of getting really something important in my life, I would find some way to sabotage. It's like I couldn't have good in my life. I relapsed after my first year. I relapsed. I dropped out of program. I wouldn't go back to that meeting that I loved. I ghosted my sponsor. I wouldn't call him. He called me. I wouldn't answer him back. People from the meeting called me. I wouldn't answer them. I just completely said, I can't face them anymore. I couldn't be honest and go back to that meeting and say, you know, I've been a phony for the past year. Be honest. Couldn't be. Being out of program for a little while, a couple of months before I went back, because I knew that I had to go back. My therapist was pushing me to go back. Right, so you screwed up. Now you need to go back. Okay? So I did. I went back into program again. I learned the difference between surrender and submission. Submission, which is what I did that first year in program, and Dr. Taibout talks about that. Submission is in program is when you give in, but you have in the back of your mind a little thought that says, oh, maybe I can just go back and eat that way again. So I have this like a little bit of defiance still in you that says, I don't really need this, but I'll go along with it for now. And that's what I did my first year. The difference between that and surrender, as you all know, is I can't do this. All right. The only thing that can help me is a surrender to God or higher power and to work the program, work the steps with a sponsor. That's all that works for me. Okay. And I didn't really know the difference between submission and surrender after that first year. And he talks a lot about that. You know? And after a while, those character defects of grandiosity, defiance, and denial, they stop working because you're being honest. So if you're being honest, you know that you're not as smart as, you know, you're not smarter than everybody else. If you're being honest, you know that you don't have all the answers to everything. If you're being open-minded and willing with your sponsor, you're open to being taught. You're open to learning. If you're open to a relationship with a higher power, you know there's only one perfect person, and it's not you. Okay, it's your heart. So gradually that sinks in. You can learn to be more lovable. So that spiritual awakening is what really causes that ego deflation in us, so that grandiose, defiant, little bratty kid, okay, gets brought back down to reality and gets the help that he needs to live life in a more sane and useful way. For me, at first relapse, I was able to remain in program free of relapse until around 2012. And what happened was, so we're talking somewhere around 1991 or so to about 2012. I relapsed again after 5 years of playing games with my program. And what happened was this. In 2006, my sponsor died. My sponsor of 10 years died. And my sponsor of 10 years, Phil, was like a father to me. Okay, he was like the father that I was never close to. And then Phil died of pancreatic cancer. And I was lost for him, Phil. I really was. And I could not bring myself to replace him with anything. But you see, that's my disease. And that's grandiosity that says, well, I can work this program without a sponsor. You know, at first I thought it was like some question of royalty, you know, but it was really my ego. My ego was saying, oh, you know, you don't really need a sponsor. You can do it. Of course, I couldn't. I couldn't work without it. As I continued that, you know, my grandiosity just got bigger and bigger again. All right? I'm doing okay. I got my food plan. I wasn't working on the program again. Right after my sponsor died, our daughter died. She passed away in a car accident. And those two things together just drove me further and further into a relapse. From about 2000, I was fully in relapse by 2012. Those 7 years, I was just back to eating the way I wanted. The defects were coming back, my nastiness, my grandiosity. My wife was telling me, go to OA, you're in trouble. I'm fine. That whole thing came back. And 2019, I was the year I was retiring. And I got scared. I had gained about 25 pounds back on, and I just saw it getting worse and worse. I could see some of my stuff coming back. Enough insight, enough direction from my higher power, who all through the years, you gotta go back. And I didn't listen, because I knew that. 2019, I came back into program, got a new sponsor, who I still have, Phil. So I've been my sponsor now for 6 years. And I went through the steps again with Trill. And I'm abstinent. I lost all the extra weight I put on. And I'm totally convinced that I do not have another recovery in me. I'm scared that if I relapse again, that may be it. It's been lasted 7 years. I'm really afraid. So I do everything he tells me to do. He wants me to call him every day, I call him every day. He wants me to call him at 6:45, I call him at 6:45. I don't call him at 7, but 6:45. Why? Because I'm not in charge. My prayer every morning, I don't feel like it all the time, but I do it. Why? Because I need my meetings. I go to one meeting 7 days a week on Zoom. I go to two in-person meetings a week. Why? Because I can't do it without the fellowship. All those things I thought I could do without, fellowship, meeting, sponsor, religious faith in a higher power, I couldn't do any of those things. I cannot avoid doing any of that. That is the end of my talk. I fully understand now the difference between submission and surrender, and I know about my pothole that I try to avoid. I'm not perfect. I don't try to be anymore. But I know where my danger zones are. And I know the things to watch out for. And above all else, I'm honest with my sponsor. I'm shaky, I tell him. I don't hold back. Because I know that if I'm not honest, it's just gonna contribute to another relapse. So, anybody want to share on this topic? Here. Anybody want to share how their process of surrendering took place? Or their relapses and how they came back from relapse? Hey, come on up here.
Good afternoon, I'm Steve from Tulsa Theater.
Hi, Steve.
Or as I like to sing, I'm Stevie and OA Man. Don't eat my garbage can. Surrender my will and measure my fill. I'm Stevie and OA Man.
Amen. Thank you for your share. I haven't figured out exactly how to deliver this line in the best way possible, but pulling in these rooms, 12-step rooms, where you get a medal. For me, I came in 1988. For me, I came in. Can you guys hear me? Okay.
No, for the.
Yeah. I think the recording's from that, right? I see. Okay, I understand. Thank you. I came in 1988. Wife number one. Eating buddy, this thing called OA. So we went together. I was about 254 and a half pounds, approximately, and I don't know what she weighed, but it's Gracie, Cambridge, Massachusetts. We got the food plan and we did it. We lost all the weight. Don't know if she had a sponsor. I don't know what she did. All I know is I did the OA diet. Turned out that self-knowledge availed me nothing. Did the OA diet, and then we moved. I didn't have a sponsor. I did have a plan of eating. I didn't do any step work. I went to two meetings a week, a men's meeting, which usually it was two guys. On a good day, it was three guys. Then we went to another huge meeting in the church, Cambridge, in the center of Cambridge. And left. If I stayed in Cambridge, I think I would have drawn into service because of a service junkie. And I would have drawn, I think eventually I would have gotten sponsored. I think eventually would have been drawn into the steps. That's not what happened. We moved. And we moved not that far, but we moved and the meetings were different and they were different than the ones in Cambridge. And so I was a quality engineer and so I knew about process control and better process and eating. I thought that if my weight went up, I'd eat less. And if my weight went down, I'd eat more and it would be simple. How hard that be? It went up and up and up and up. You know, as you often hear, it went back to 254 and a half plus a 52-pound bone. 18 years passed. I was doing Tai Chi. I was the only one who took Tai Chi that needed to take a shower afterwards because I was doing Tai Chi over the summer, so I took gentle yoga class. I couldn't move. It sort of gave me the gift of desperation, and I knew where my gray sheet food plan was, so I grabbed it. I knew where the scale was from that. And I started weighing and measuring my food off of that. And I started going to the chiropractor every day to get a scale. And every day, I weighed. It reminded me that this program worked, but they did differently this time. I got a sponsor. I've buried two sponsors, so stay away from me. And she was great. It was what I needed at the time. And then I was going to a HAL meeting, so I started doing the steps. And the reality of my powerlessness was eventually revealed. And 30 questions in HAL, I did stuff. And then I got stuck on step four. I asked a different sponsor to help me with that. And said, you really haven't done step two, so we're going to demote. I did a lot of writing on step two using the AA. And then I was able to move on, because I'm an atheist. I was an atheist then. I'm an atheist. Hasn't changed. Changed is the understanding that that's necessary. It was through that process that I was able to surrender. Surrender is not a permanent situation, my experience. Surrender is like a library book you take out of the library occasionally. That is just about daily. I sometimes like to take my will back. I'm fortunate to live in an area where I can go to 3 face-to-face meetings every week. They're all co-ed, which I prefer. I used to go to a men's meeting and the co-ed meetings, but there's usually the one on Saturday. I have breakfast together, go to their tables. The men go to their table. And, like a junior high school dance. Exactly right. And it's great. These are some of my favorite people. I can take more.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Hi, Mike. I'm Kosovo. Where are you?
Hi, Mike.
I want to kind of share a little bit more about the difference between being a man in OA and then what I experienced with the women. When I first got OA, exactly what they said to do is just do the food. And I had this illusion that if I lost all this weight, it'd be great. And I did. I lost a boatload of weight. I was, and for the first time in my life, there were women actually paying attention to me, calling me up. And actually, I thought that was like my ultimate dream. And I came to find out that, you know, one of my coping mechanisms was that, fearful of intimacy. So my mantra unconsciously was, it's kind of hard to hug a fat guy. If you're going to hug a fat guy, you really got to reach. And they got to prove to you they didn't love you that way. I was skinny. And there were girls interested in me just because I was skinny. And it didn't compute. And I crashed. I crashed back. The meetings for about 5 months. But even now, I'm not happy. I don't come to OA to lose weight. I come to OA to try to be sober. It, to me, is a sobriety is my goal. Weigh myself that much, except when I go to the doctor. Through this time is that I just let things happen, sponsor, and if you want to be my sponsor, you have to work the book. It's like a textbook. You're done, call me, and we're going to start working. And I wasn't in control. And if I wanted to learn what was, I didn't worry about the weight and of being abstinent. Because that's what I did first. I can white knuckle and put down a diet down, and I can sit there and make myself eat little food. I'll have a boatload of weight, but I ain't sober. I don't have any sobriety at all, and that means nothing. Abstinence is important in order to be present for me is to be sober. Live a life of sobriety. My sponsor, the new sponsor, said to me, I've had him for about a year and a half now. You want to learn to be sober? Learn from the people that wrote a book changing me. I'm almost done with my 9 steps. I've got 2 more to go. The law, which is a big step for me. It's different. I'm still messy sometimes with my food, and I still struggle because I still go my will. But the difference is my goal is different. And that can't relate to people when they get into the thing where they start saying I maintain a certain weight or I might question myself, why don't I work these steps? What's the real crap? What's the real stuff? What's the nitty gritty stuff? What is it? And I want to live my life and muddle it up. That's what I kind of sponsor's great at.
Pretty, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi,
buddy. Ed, and everybody else's shares. Very new to OA. I met at my first meeting. Helped me install in Pasadena. Don't know why it happened, just went out there. This had been on my mind for a while. Had 65 days of abstinence. And I actually started off with a guy, found a guy at a meeting about a week and a half in, and a little bit of an odd, he helped me on the phone one night, and he kind of helped me create a list of red line foods, and kind of sketched out three meals, two snacks. And, but there was some other stuff that was, you know, part of the ethos of whatever his little sect of OA in California and, sort of, you know, just a different way. And it just didn't feel totally comfortable. It was only about, I think, 3 days of abstinence. And I got on a plane to come to Rochester. Because it was already planned, I was coming to see my family, which is like usually I would come to Rochester and just eat the whole time I'm here because it's so uncomfortable, memories, anything, just whatever. And I got on a plane very early in the morning. I was so tired. I stopped in Vegas, like a layover in Vegas, and I called him up. And I said, I'm going to find another sponsor right in the middle of this trip to go back home. But it was just, I just knew there was something about some of the stuff that he shared with me that was like, I just didn't feel comfortable with. Primarily criticism of other members and sort of being like, these members saying this is what we want to do. This is what we want to do. And that didn't sit well with me. That just didn't feel spiritual. It didn't feel like the 12. It was a little bit of what the woman was talking about at the panel. A little bit of like, kind of being, you know, I don't know, put my finger on it. But the minute I let him go, I felt better. And I came to Rochester and I sort of was like trying to stay abstinent and do the meals. And but I made it through the whole weekend. And I went to a meeting in Brighton. And they talked about this convention. So I was like, well, I'll come back for the convention. You know, I had 3 days of abstinence. I've been in OA for that. Then the same member that I connected with about at that meeting reached out to me, and I started to go to the meeting on Wednesday nights and at 7 p.m. Pacific. That's nice. So, and I found another sponsor. And I'll tell you my, you know, story about that. I'm crazy. I get back to California, I do not have a sponsor, but I'm just thinking I'm doomed. You know, I'm going to eat. How am I going to keep this? I don't even know what I'm doing. And, but I know I need a sponsor. And I had to go to this convention, this just a fun hobby thing down in San Diego. I was going to a meeting every day. I've gone to a meeting every day since I started. I just, no matter what, I find a meeting. Sometimes it's on Zoom. Down, and there was this meeting in San Diego at 10 in the morning that I found. I'm like, well, I'll go there and then I'll go to this convention thing to get my meeting in. And as I was walking into that church in San Diego, which is, it's a 2.5 hour drive from where I live. So it's like going to, almost all the way to Toronto. Here. And, so I'm almost the way to Toronto at a meeting. San Diego, and I'm walking and I go, maybe I'll find a sponsor here. And a man in there. He was totally cool. He'd been around forever. He used to have lunch with Roxanne, the founder. And he's been around OA forever. And he's from LA. And he's just immediately, I just got his whole, like, it was just sort of something about him was great. And I talked to him afterwards, and he lived in Claremont, which is about 1.5 hours. It's up in LA. He doesn't really live in San Diego, but he's my sponsor. but the energy was different. It was like pure OA and everything I've talked to him about. He comes back with all this, but yeah, so the comfort level around the program is just navigating the men in the program. And, but my sponsor says, you know, when you go to meetings, listen to, for identification and listen for hope. And so I just do that. And if I don't hear, if I don't identify or I don't experience hope, I just go next in my mind. I just kind of, okay, that's going to be, for some reason, higher power has their message for somebody else. I have no idea. I just, identification, hope. Anyway, so that's it. Thanks for letting me participate. I don't really have a lot of time in the program, but it's good to just check in. And thank you so much for all your service, Ed, for this.
Hi, everyone. I am a compulsive eater.
Bruce.
I am from Ottawa, Ontario. In OA since 2000. Just a, you know, some of the stories about sponsors made me think. When I first started, like my first meeting, these were in the basement of a meeting. So the first hour had a numerous meeting, 12 to 12, and at the hour there was a 15-minute break. It would be routinely 70 people at these meetings. First meeting, I was just sitting there. And this man who's sitting beside me, back there, looked tiny, basically turned to me and said, go get a chip. So off I get up to get a chip, because I was not about to say. But I really wasn't. I was in another 12-step program, and my step, I go to OA, it would count towards the reason I was there. And I kept hearing about, kept hearing little things, like, oh, I felt that, I've done that. Then this guy went up from the Ottawa Valley, from the meeting. He was also Irish with the red hair. I did meet so much of my older brothers. Along with him, I think I could get along with pretty much everybody. But he said yes. He suggested for me to do lots of things. Then he started giving me questions at every step because he found my weakness, homework. Not for me to do anything, just say I'll learn. That'll be like, oh, I'm going to do that. He had a heart attack. All the rest of us in OA, we're, hey, I'll go see him on Thursday. You see him, it was my turn. I went to see him. He's lying there in a bed with the wires, enough of them that if he was a used car, about $800 or $900. And he's like, oh, Bruce, good to see you. Now sit down. I'm gonna tell you how to do step four. I have half the capacity, and later on, I'm doing my step four with him. Sit down, and then gives the step work back to me. He's like, you're going to do this over, and you're going to swear more mean. And he explained in step four, it's the only spot where we get to take someone else, get to eviscerate the other person. It's more imagined. It can be completely in my head. But I have to get it down on paper, because that is the truth at the time. We are only as sick as our secrets. Throwing F-bombs left and right. Today, when I do step work, and I think I'm finished, I'll write down F, U, blank, whatever. Angry, I'll write some more. Because that means I didn't get everything out. And sometimes I'll just say that, I'm like, no, I've got it all out, so I'm done. I can point, my opinion, there's no point looking at my part unless I swept my side of the street. I'll just be harboring some resentment against the other person. Oh yeah, like, you know, I was self-centered, but they did. Not helpful for me. I guess the sponsorship was in my mind, because I was at the sponsorship this morning. And it was my turn to become a sponsor to it, because this is sort of like, you know, the way angels with all that. It was mentioned a 60 or someone who has less days. On step three, you can, someone who's working on step two. For me, it's one of the most rewarding tools. It only reminds me what my life was like, because my sponsor tell me that they're going through most of those days. But, and this is a secret, probably, like, maybe more out of our conversation, probably, than just because we only get to keep what we have. Like,
hey, everybody, for sharing. It's 2 minutes to spare. We did a great job filling the hour. Thank you all for sharing. And enjoy the rest of your day, okay? And I'll see you all soon.
Thank you,
Ed. Lead us. God, we cannot change. The courage to change the things we can, to know the difference. Thou will not mind.
I'm good. I know this was a little dry, but I found this guy very interesting. Is that on because he's hurt or because you don't want him to?
Left paw.
Yeah.
It's
tunes it or licks it, yeah?
We haven't been able to. Yeah, we've been, we've got pills
today, so. Oh, God.
Yeah, we'll do what you do.
I know that.
Is there another meeting going on there?
No, in there, no?
Yeah.
I don't know how to turn that off.
Okay. What you do, by the way, is you just turn it down.